bill purports to set out some, in section two, some of the things that the court should consider in awarding custody. As I remember the hearing, the only disputable thing we had was subsection five, down at the bottom of page five, which required the court to make affirmative findings of fact. Most of the correspondence we've gotten opposes that, including the Oregon Circuit Judges Association and the bar. I really don't see the need of it.
Well, why did they do away with the best interest concept in subsection 8?
Well, because it's added in section 2.
Yeah, see, they've got a whole list over here.
You're on.
Yeah, starting at the bottom of page 4,
I'm glad there's somebody else that asked questions like that. Lord knows I think of a lot of
times. Well, this is required.
Who put this bill in?
The bar bill, I think. No, it's an interim committee bill, excuse me.
Mr. Harrington came down and spoke to us about this. John seems to think we took care of most of this in the uniform
child custody.
Well, we took care of quite a bit of it with respect to what the court takes into account. Of course, that bill was intended really to get at another problem, and that is other decrees from other states.
Well, since, you know, it seems like I just did this.
Yeah, we just did it on the change of name. The Martin report comes up.
Yeah, look, we changed the name of the wife. Didn't we take care of that in
another
bill?
Not back in
here.
Where's that?
Line
28.3. Oh, that's a different line. Yeah.
Then we got an amendment.
Did we pass that bill out, or
is
that
hasn't
passed yet?
My children's rights amendment will come on for the memory report here.
Oh, wait a minute, it must have passed.
Oh, yeah, we sent that out.
It passed the committee, but it hasn't passed the school now.
That's bleeding children's rights.
Well, what's the wish of the committee?
I move the table, Senate Bill 22.
Well, I wouldn't. No, I don't want to mislead you. I'm not saying we took care of all this in House Bill 2051.
It doesn't speak to this at all.
Well, Well, there's a little overlap with respect to what the court considers, but they're not inconsistent bills. They're not in conflict.
Except for the change of name.
Yeah, and that's a different bill.
Kirk, call the roll on tabling Senate Bill 22.
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried. Senate Bill 24. On page 9 of this bill.
Yeah.
We were going to insert Mr. Hampton's bill of 2984 as subsection 3. Mm-hmm. It has to do with attorney's fees.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that would go on page 9.
As a new sub 3?
Yeah.
Can you read us what it would say down?
Yeah, it would read, in a proceeding under subsection 1 of this section, the court may assess against either party a reasonable attorney's fee for the benefit of either party.
And that would take care of your bill, too.
Move the amendment.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
A change of name of the
If the House bill we sent out of here passes both the House and the Senate, then it would automatically change this.
Yeah, I feel like that, but if we're going to turn on Thursday,
well, neither bill is going to help you if we adjourn on Thursday.
Well, we sent all those tax bills over to Friday. I don't know how we're going to adjourn Thursday.
Most lucid act.
Well, maybe that was the reason.
When they fail on Friday.
The majority report is just when you want to change the name, man, you've got it. Unless Judge Russell
Buck. I want to see what we can do on the G.
Well, Vera, this act just sets out the things in the support order that he shall consider, and he has to consider the change of the name. It doesn't speak of the presumption, though. So, I think I kind of agree with George as far as this bill is concerned. We're going to have to fight the battle with conservative over here.
The amendment with regard to attorney's fees.
You're not really.
It's already filed.
Yeah, it's coming up.
It's a good looking
the road. Stand by.
In Grove Senate Bill 24 is amended to the floor with a big pass.
Representative Marks has a question, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Mr. Marks.
Okay. This is more than just bringing the separation in the same under the same.
It goes a little bit further.
It was online.
And irreconcilable differences of the dissolution of marriage in that it speaks to physical and mental illness of the party.
Yeah.
On line 13 of page 2.
That's the part that I think both Bunn and I had a little problem with.
Could I?
Oh, where was that?
Did you elaborate on the problem?
Well, you know, somebody gets sick and you want. I don't know if that should be enough grounds for.
Where is that?
Page 2, line 13.
Yeah.
Oh.
You still have to find a breakdown of marriage.
Yeah, an irremediable breakdown. Oh,
but
because of those.
Yeah.
Facts.
You know, because of those things.
I believe strongly in the right to a separation and those sort of things. If you've seen the case, you know, you've got permanent mental illness. Oh, yeah. As long as you don't have to change your name, that's the truth.
But, Bob, last year when we were debating the new divorce reform act, as it came to us, they had a provision in there for mental illness as a ground. And we got the head of the mental health department out here to come out here and say that, you know, that's thinking in the dark ages. And that was removed as a ground for petition for divorce.
Is it put back here? In effect.
You know, actually, this doesn't really say anything. Because irreconcilable differences, it just covers everything.
Yeah.
Well, and as Harrington pointed out, a lot of the purpose of this bill is to make it consistent with the changes made last session in the divorce law.
On the property. That's one of the problems we've had now is that client A walks in and says, husband's running around. I don't want a divorce.
I want a separation. Why do you want a separation? Well, I want child support. So well, we have a separate statute. Now you can sue and get child support without even going through dissolution or separation. See, well, I want a separation. I said, well, do you realize that if you sue for separation, you may as well induce the husband, even though the husband, under older notions, would have been bought the party of fault, to cross claim for dissolution. And I think this treats separation much more frankly than we do now treat. And I think it makes a lot of sense. Don't you, George? During the present law, to sue for separation, you have to go through all the old grounds. If the court, if your adversary moves for no particular court,
I move to delete the words on line 13, or the physical or mental illness of a party, and put a period after party.
Probably you just reinstate the old language. Paul is moved to reinstate the old language in subsection 1 of 107025.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Any objection to that? So, any further amendment? I think that's the only place that makes reference. Further discussion? Third call of the roll.
Andrew?
Aye.
Pat?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Paul?
Aye.
Here's one where there is, I think, quite a bit of duplication between this bill and they don't conflict in the strict sense of the word as far as both bills amending the same standards or anything. I think this is one that quite fully covers House Bill 2051.
Did that pass?
Yes, it passed.
Oh, good. You know, that was over there for a long, long time, wasn't it? 4 months
or something? Yeah, it was in
committee
a long time.
Which one?
The
Uniform
Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When
it
passed
it
last week.
So there's no need for this then at all?
I really question whether there's a need for it. Even under the Uniform
Enforcement of Foreign Judgment Act.
Well, make sure.
Not quite yet.
Oh, there is one.
Yeah, I think 2051 was taken care of.
Problem. Takes care of 4, takes care of 2, takes care of 3.
Move to table Senate Bill 29.
Let's call the roll. tabling Senate Bill 29.
Hanson?
Aye.
Cass?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Carl?
Aye.
Wolfen?
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Senate Bill 31, which is one of the advisory committee bills.
Thread of the stream, I've never noticed that language before.
We had quite a bit of testimony on these next three bills and two hearings. You know, 33.
About 31.
Well, 31. Yeah, man, I better talk about 31.
Yeah,
all right.
I think it's all right. The only question I had is the new language in lines 24 through 26. That's the section that permits the owner the land to construct the wharf. In the old language allowed him to construct it for the use and accommodation of any ships, boats, or vessels that may or can navigate the stream. And now it's limited strictly to those engaged exclusively in the receipt and discharge of goods, merchandise, and performance of governmental functions. And I'm just wondering if it isn't cutting out the recreational use entirely.
Well,
someone constructed a wharf out for mooring recreation craft, or a landing of a craft. It wouldn't still fit into that rather narrow permission now.
Is there a purpose for restricting that?
Pardon?
Is there any purpose in that kind of restrictive language?
Well, I'm trying to remember.
You may want to look at the minutes on May 21st. You look on page 5, beginning on the lower third of the page here. First section of the bill.
Chairman Cole allowed us out 12, 13, 14 isn't making sense. Did he let you know?
Well, he's straightened that out. The question I have is on line 14, we're meant by other than artificial filling, and went out there piling. Look, and you turn over the other, and you answered that in the last paragraph. felt that a commercial enterprise such as a marina should have some state control and should compensate the state and public for loss of water use. Just that apparently that a canal to use the warpage for recreational purposes, they'll have to get a permit and pay a fee.
The wharf is a wharf is a wharf. Is that a typographical error, or do you mean that? Bill Cox.
Where's this? Where's
this? Under Bill Cox on page 6.
That was for emphasis, wasn't it? I want to make it clear.
Some question, but apparently they're not clear on whether they can, but apparently they feel they cannot hinder the construction under present law.
So with this bill would, as you say, recreational wharfs or docks?
Anything that doesn't come under the category of commercial enterprise of receipt and discharge of goods or performance of government functions, they would now have to get a permit to build or extend the wharf beyond low water. Or into a stream.
Mr. Chairman, on line 26, before the period, I move we insert the word unless George Cole says otherwise.
Give his address to
him. Yeah.
That may change. We could call it the Cole Water Bill.
No, I can see if it was inevitable, you know, if it wasn't a lot of other activity. I'd kind of like to have the right to build a couple of little wharfs there for the boat, for the wife and kids.
But the reason
on our water?
The reason for this is that the fish and game people want to kind of supervise it and make sure that you're not taking out. You can go in and say, well, I want to build a wharf, and that's what you do again, and you move in a room this big full of rocks and dump it in, and there go the salmon spawning beds and the national fish habitats and the
turbidity
of the water. I move. Bill 31 before it be passed by the nation.
Further discussion?
Yes, well, we're waiting to start jumping on the axle. It's all right.
Are we being insensitive to the needs of the less fortunate who maybe don't have the money to
How much
does
the permit cost?
To buy a what?
Oh, whatever it takes to build one with a permit.
No, we just amended the film removal law that if a homeowner wants to do it, they don't cost $25. Well, it costs that. Commercial operator, $300.
Would that apply to this too?
Mm-hmm. This dovetails into the film removal law that we just passed.
Well, they won't be able to artificially fill anymore.
Yeah, it's got to run down.
The question is, what can he build a dock or a wharf out into the stream?
It was only $25.
We mentioned it specifically to take care of the farmer and the guy that lives on the bank.
you get it from equal rights.
And he can own a $7,000 motorboat.
Yeah, but see, those $7,000 motorboats you usually bought was about 3 or 4% down, so much of them for the next day.
Yeah, $210.
Well, now that it's talking about fat, let's pass the municipal legislation and not make that possible.
Well, let's just pass this.
Some of us are going to have some of us have to buy it.
Well, I do too, but the point is.
You're setting a priority. You don't have to buy that way at all.
Look, if this is going, I want to sell tickets next time.
The point is, I'll have to buy it that way, but we're buying a lot of stuff we don't need, Cabo Bay.
Well, what do you mean we don't need?
$7,000 motorboat?
You don't buy your food that way, cool?
I buy what I enjoy.
It doesn't cost you $7,000.
Now I can get put in jail for it. Sir, call a roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Soft touch.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Wolfer?
No.
You gotta be kidding.
Come on.
Why is it about principles?
We'll stick Tony Meeker on you.
What do you want to do with this bill now?
I'm not afraid of Tony.
Yeah, but he's a senator.
No, we have an opponent.
Well, that's okay. We can still put it down for you now.
Put on your mask. You're not going to pull it off, are you?
Yeah, I will.
Will you?
All right,
well,
I'm getting mad.
I don't believe it.
I don't care. I just need to vote against 15 bills, most of which I like because there's a couple things on there I don't like.
You know, doesn't it make it. You can't think that the Marshall is
your life.
Oh, my God. Didn't we carry anything?
All right, Mr. McGruder's here. We'll give all these to Mr. McGruder. He was on the advisory committee.
Good idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, he knows what's going on.
No.
33.
That is 32.
Now, if you'll go back to the same minutes, it goes right on with. Again, at the bottom of page 6.
Oh, the navigability check.
I thought this was a good bill. Still think so.
I didn't think so. No. It just comes down to
there was much more debate on 33.
It's a real problem on 33.
Yeah, we got to find some way to.
You just got a whole bunch of bills, honey.
Yeah. I need a job. Create a special one. Navigability track. You're 31? 45 secretaries.
We don't have any answers. Do you have some amendments, Luke? To 33?
Do I?
Yeah, Drew said you had some amendments.
I came out.
I was supposed to be getting some from Wally.
No, not Wally.
Mr. Cox. I don't want to call him
Wally. He died.
I know, that's good. I'm supposed to get an amendment. No.
There's one thing though, is this bill, you have excellent suggestions to it. I mean,
yeah.
They're I would make them, but they're.
Dick, did you get a copy of the amendment? Let me rush off to my office and see if by chance falls in good hands.
I'd just like to say one thing. Back in 1859, I think there in about 1920, the state to ensure navigability of the country during flood time would get flat bottom river boats to go upstream. There's no way you could ever get a boat down. And if they use that as an indication of what was navigable on February 4th, 1859, you know, that's just like saying whatever stream that they want stays navigable for whatever purposes there by now.
To do now.
Wow.
The problem is they do it piecemeal.
Now that's better than just making it all the way across.
Well, I wonder if it is. I wonder if it's something we should get resolved statewide.
It's a terrible problem. Say you go to buy a piece of property. The title companies have gotten smart recently. They won't insure title to it. You know, they say, well, we're opting out everything is state mail. Okay. So you're dead. What do you tell your client when he comes to you and he says, no, I'm going to buy this piece of property. Do I own it or does the state own it? It's something that needs to be litigated at some time. You tell him, well, go ahead and buy it. You may own it or the state may.
I think it should be determined, but I question.
I think it's
very starting to be determined in an administrative claim.
As the bill presently is.
We're going to have some amendments for clarifying notice, for one thing, aren't we?
And also on whether.
And also whether it was, whether it amounted to a presumption of any kind. If we felt it shouldn't.
Well, what I was thinking we might explore, I'm sure somebody must explore it, and Dick, you might know whether they. You run the information, is this. If you had a way to give everybody notice, whether you call it by radio, police gazette, or whatever, you know, commonly circulating publication might be read by all of the current owners. Give them notice that you're going to determine the point of navigability, the non-navigability. And then say in your notice, we propose to have it be determined between this point and this point. Okay, and then everybody comes in and says, I think it ought to be here, 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 or here, whatever it should be. Then, once you get everybody satisfied below this line, you can let them drop out, because they will consent to the determination above that. Okay? And then everybody up here, the only ones you're fighting with, and you can gradually reduce the number of people the state's fighting with over this. Then, get that number reduced. Then go into court and declare territory judgment suit, or file title, whatever you want to call it. That, to me, would be workable. But the way this appears to work, I just can't see how to achieve this. Because you're going to, well, here's how it would appear to work.
Well, the reason it's so crucial is because the state owns the bed for the navigable stream, you see.
Yeah.
And it comes into play right now when there's a great dearth of gravel deposits, which are very valuable. State sees a gravel deposit, and that by the stream, and the state agency can determine that it's a navigable stream. That means the state owns it. It's a very volatile political issue, and it's a very sticky little one.
George, don't you see this bill the way it's written as requiring this kind of procedure? I'm the land division. I guess under Chapter 183 or something. Yeah. I declare to somebody, potentially the riparian owner, all the way wrong, that this is where navigability ends. It's navigable at this point. I declare. Now, what more do I do besides declaring under this bill?
That's all they have.
Well, it doesn't say declare, it says determine.
Well,
my question is, what does determine mean? Does this raise a presumption of some kind?
Remember, when one of the witnesses said that determined doesn't really mean that. That they meant only that this was taking a position.
That's the AG's opinion.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would going by that. I agree with you. Determined makes it sound like a judicial determination, but that's not what
I think we could spell it out, sir. We're going to have amendments in regards to notice.
George,
can
I ask
about
something?
Yeah.
You were on that Skinner one.
Was this, I mean, did you finally hash this out and it's a compromise, or what? Were there others?
There was a compromise to move.
Betty came up.
Betty Brown, and who was state?
You know what might work? Dick, would it work to do this? To provide a procedure by which Land Division publishes in the papers up and down the valley, or I guess it's mainly the Willamette now, isn't it? It's a big problem. Up and down the valley, publishes papers that there are, say, four or five different alternate points of maximum navigability. Okay? And then have people protest or object to that.
Thank you.
And that way, when the protests come in, the Land Division could say, we've got so many protests between here and here, so many between here and here, and so forth. That way, they could then get a hold on that legal action, quite the whole thing.
You see, you've got one basic problem in this whole thing.
tremendous conflict of interest within the division of state land. I mean, you're trying, what you're doing with this bill is saying, well, here we've got a state agency that will look at all aspects of the problem, and then they will determine the solution, the equitable solution. Well, they've got a problem, because as Norma points out, just right on, they're trying to grab as much land as they can, okay? And probably rightfully so. That's probably their right position, okay? Representative Hampton is a property owner along there. Logically, he'd like to protect his rights. So, I mean, you've done a marvelous job of just tabs the pocket of every lawyer that decides to specialize in this kind of business. But if you're really doing a job, you're going to take the court the kind of thing that you're
doing. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I also wanted to make an observation about this, too, as an underlying factor. The state geologists and the Division of State Lands and people in the State Highway Department started several years ago to plot the greatest sources of gravel up and down the Willamette River. And with the idea of who uses more gravel deposits than the State Highway Department. And the private property owners, of course, are really concerned about this sort of thing. Plus, the state's usually the worst offender in all those things. You know, the Highway Department always has, and as far as the environmental impact on rivers and streams.
Well,
have
you got
an
amendment being prepared, Lee?
I thought I'd gotten some amendments from somebody on this, and I'm sure it's looking for it now, but I'm not sure. I have it in my mind that I did.
Let's head over tomorrow and see if we can
come up with
something.
I mean, you're right that we need to do this. I personally think it's a horrible bill the way it's written.
I do too.
And solve the problem.
All right, let's jump to 443. We have a gentleman from the State Crane. Wanted to be heard on that. Sure, you want to come forward? Identify yourself.
Chairman, I'm John Chamber, State Printer, and I didn't really come to testify, but just not available for any questions that may be asked regarding this bill.
This was put in, I think, at the behest of the Supreme Court. So they're requesting authority to charge, apparently, whatever they feel is necessary. Provide what a van sheet.
Me.
Yeah, we do have the statement of the court administrator.
What's happened in the past few years, I think, on this, and I spent some time with the clerk on this before the session started, is that when you have the legislature fixing the fees for the advance sheets, it always comes to the Judiciary Committee, and the Judiciary Committee has always been made up of lawyers who buy these, and the fee has been kept so low that we weren't paying the cost of providing them.
It's still $24 a year now.
And it used to be $13.
Yeah. Pray for the day when we can have our closed circuit TV in our offices and dial in the synopses of the law.
Is the general trust of this, the Supreme Court's going to end up turning it over to West? Is that what's going to happen?
I would believe so, West or some other publishing house.
We started taking that West to Oregon before it dropped. I didn't like it.
Oh, did you take the one that's...
Yeah. That's pretty green book.
Yeah. There is another way it can be done. They could send their... Hope they do those in San Francisco or just send them back to Midway. They send them somewhere.
Mr. Chairman, the West Publishing Company is located in Minnesota, Minneapolis.
Is that where they... print? Okay.
I believe so. Either that or in Idaho. Branches around.
Are you opposed to this?
No, sir. not as it's written now. Our only concern, Mr. Chairman, was that, as you know, the state printing plan is geared to do legislative workload. We have to have adequate staff and equipment to function during the interim so we can come back and serve an ever-growing legislature. If we... we eliminate the Oregon report, and I don't want to imply that this is make work for the state printing plan, but if you do eliminate the Oregon report, it would affect our staff by about 6 people. From a selfish interest, of course, I would not want to lose that work. On the other hand, I have my own private feelings about whether Oregon should be in the publishing business. I'm sure that... But this is a determination that you people have to make. I'm concerned about the state printing plant functioning to take care of the legislative workload on the odd numbered year. But this has been changed. When the original bill was introduced, I believe that it took it away from us immediately. And that, of course, was a concern to me.
What do you think it does now?
Well, it leaves it as it is now, only it makes a provision that the Supreme Court Administrator can, if he so chooses, change some formatting around so that we could probably come closer to competing price-wise with the private private publishing house, but it also requires the Department of General Services to set the price for advance sheets and the Oregon report. Now, before, we had set the price on reports, but we did not on the advance sheet. And actually, it's very little from what the statute is on the books right now.
Mr. Chairman, I think that on the page one of this statement, the largest reason for this bill, and I know that the Supreme Court has worked hard to find some sort of solution, and you're constantly being asked by the emergency board why they have all the money comes out of the general fund, and they don't get enough money to pay back even the storage cost of it, and they have to find some way to put the reporting system on a paying basis to the lawyers, because right now the general fund is subsidizing Lou and me and Magruder and Cole. You betcha. This is the best solution that they could come up with.
There's a magic word in my ear.
I thought that might do something for you.
First call or roll on Senate Bill 443.
Yeah, but we don't have to be sex
or
relationship.
Huh?
Sexual
cast.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Unanimous consent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Doesn't make it. Mr. Cassidy carries. Let's look at Senate Bill 39. We have amendments, but also we have another bill that Mr. Bassett is interested in. It's called the Applegate River Bill. Remember, it was when Senate Bill 39 came to us, it was proposed to amend it take care of the problem of the gravel bar at the mouth of the Applegate River.
We sent that out as environment.
Sent what out?
Where is it?
I don't think it takes care of the problem.
Yeah. It's exactly.
In some more rivers.
3275.
No, this is the same amendment.
It's here. We have that bill.
Oh, let's get them both going.
Both of them?
We have 3275 now. Yeah, it was sent on to the committee.
Did it come from environment?
Well, it came from another committee. I'll have to
check. No, it was
count.
Introduced. This was introduced, wasn't it? 3275.
Yeah.
Oh no, the one that we sent out of environment, which is on its way to the floor, and I thought that I saw it on the agenda for tomorrow.
That was the Fannie Ann River.
Oh, well, it's the other one. And it has all of it amended into it. But all I know is, and it's been over a week ago that we did that.
I called Phil Park 3 times to find out to look at it and tell me if it is. I couldn't find the article in there where you authorized the state engineer to supervise the taking of gravel.
Oh boy, the amendments that they presented that morning that were adopted were exactly like this. That they presented, and that's what we said we adopted. I've never seen the bill printed.
Nancy gave me a copy of the draft that was reprinted on the
They separated the two because they knew that the Santa Ana was going to be controversial. Representative Byers and Representative Gwynn were going to oppose the South Santa Ana, but nobody opposed the Snake, so she put your amendments on the Snake River one. If it didn't, that's what we voted on, because it was very explicit, and these amendments were handed out. Voted to amend the bill and pass it out, and she assigned it to somebody to carry.
Well, the consensus, I think, was that we shouldn't mess with 39, but rather should use a different bill, and that's why 3275 was dropped from, so we could act on that. But let's
well, then
act
you're
on
putting Vera me in a bad place, because then when the Snake River, Scenic River thing gets up there, a good way to kill it would be to say, well, the amendments are coming out on another bill.
Did you put these on the Snake River thing?
I didn't, the chairman did, but there wasn't any controversy at all on the Snake.
Then I moved the amendments to the bill.
Well, we have another bill to do. 3275.
Yeah. That's a House bill, it's a problem.
That means the last bill.
What was it on? Make a Senate bill?
Was it?
If you're interested in, I don't really care whether you adopt the amendment.
That even that bill
I don't remember the name of it at all, but.
I think you better get amended on the Senate Bill 39.
Well, the only answer you didn't go back to.
Well, the problem we have is that.
We can refer it back here. But I couldn't find it in there.
We have a problem of germaneness.
I got conflict notices on 39 for House Bill 2142, 3275, and Senate Bill 896.
I don't remember the name of it, but
you may be called a person to find out what it's all about.
It's a 2024.
See, I'm sorry, I just don't remember the number, but there. The Snake and the Santa Ana were included in one bill brought down to the governor's office. And I wasn't there the night that they had the testimony on it because I was up in my other meeting. But there was a lot of controversy on the South Santa Ana. So the next morning they split the two and put the Snake in one bill and the Santa Ana in the other.
Well, Santa Ana's coming up tomorrow.
And Representative Kefouri was assigned to carry the one on the South Santa Ana. Then they took these exact amendments, because I know when she brought them up, it was a surprise to me, and I asked her to wait while I read them, and it's exactly the same thing. And it was a unanimous vote. I mean,
and I asked, will that take care of your problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vera said it would take care, and I asked Nancy to give me a copy. She brought in the first draft, and I submitted to the attorney here, and I haven't heard any words from
him. Well, I'll be.
Where's 2142? I don't know, but Sid, Senate Bill 896 is exactly the same.
Yeah.
3275.
That's right. And Fox is getting that out on Thursday at 1 o'clock.
896?
Yeah.
So should we wait for it then? And
whichever.
And add these and just pass it?
No. Of course, he's just getting it out of the committee out in the hall as long as they get over here.
Well, of course, that's what we'd be doing too if we. 3275
out.
The best
thing would
be to get 3275 going
because
the
Senate acts a damn sight faster than now. If you can get that out, I'll have him hold up his 896. He just waits to see which
well,
one.
let's find out if these amendments have been added to that other bill. Maybe that'll take care of it. Is there going to be any problem getting the snake bill through?
I wasn't there for the testimony, but I assume not, because that's why she separated them. But I know that Representative Quinn and Representative Byers were upset about the staff standing.
Yeah, I know it's a problem. Can you find out what bill it is in the environment, Bob?
I'll go call Julie and she said.
I have a note here, 2142. Send me that.
It's 2024.
I'll call the.
Yeah, 896 is a state federal affair.
Yeah. It's exactly the same one here. While Norm is doing that, you want to look at 881. Now, this is a very simple bill. All it does is validate marriages. Made prior to
the doggone minute.
January 173.
What
might have been made prior to the expiration of 60 days. It's something we do just about every session. Validate marriages that have been improperly joined.
Stepped out on his errand, George, and he called back.
Okay.
He just went out to deliver something.
It's just a curious keeping statutes they pass every session. Because we've got
validate marriage bill 881.
Why didn't you just put it on that in the statute then? So that automatically.
Do pass. Hanson was 881 to the floor of the do pass. First call of the roll.
Hanson.
Aye.
Yes.
Lots of children don't inherit money. Their father's died.
Mark.
Aye.
Aye. Lots of widows don't get the money.
Aye.
Alright, Terry, if he doesn't make it, he wants to put the mark.
Here's a
that's one of the
report.
853. This is the bill that the bar of jury had passed.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well, you wouldn't if you knew that it helped discipline lawyers. There's an issue that's the one that speeds up the disciplinary process.
Mm-hmm. 852 or 853?
Yeah,
oh. 853 is wonderful.
Yeah.
So all the lawyers here have only got one filing, but it's one filing.
I got three filings. Do now, do sometimes, do bar.
Move to.
My husband.
Perhaps move 853 to the floor of the due pass.
It is this bar more turn.
Gas discussion.
On the this bar
more turn. Mm-hmm. I have no way of knowing, but it will handle a procedure. It will occur much more expeditiously. Okay?
Okay.
Good job.
Putting speedy trial like that.
Take the Board of Governors out of the middle of this thing, too.
Move.
First call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
What else you call me?
Aye.
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 Aye. Carry. Unanimous consent. If it doesn't make it.
That
pencil probably came off. Did you roll for one if it doesn't make it?
Put a rider in there
like
this.
Just like I did that other
field. We're going to get a call back on 39 and this other one. Do you think?
Well, I asked her how long she'd be going. She said, well, she just stepped out and running in.
I have a couple of bills.
Oh.
I don't know if I have my votes here or not.
Tell you what, what about guest passenger? Maybe you got your
okay.
Books on your
hey, 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 you may have that here now.
Yeah.
I'm
well,
with
you.
I'm with you.
Yeah, what's the number on guest passenger?
2538?
No,
2528. 2528? Oh, I know something we've got to look at. Those guys out of the pen are just dying for this. 384.
Oh, good. Time to go
time
visit.
To go visit.
Before
well,
we do time
fantastic.
To visit.
Fantastic.
Watch this. Metaphors.
384 sets the specific time when you let them go. Or when it terminates parole.
Yeah, that's a good bill.
I'm not so sure.
What kind of voting is that?
I'm not sure.
Modification of social conduct.
Well, this doesn't prevent them from being discharged early. It just sets the maximum time when they will be discharged from their parole. Now, the discussion, some of the testimony was, well, this might tend to delay the parole for those prisoners they think...
That's what I would think. I think they would adjust. They would just adjust everything back like that.
I know the guys out at the joint sure anxious for it.
Well, I don't
think
they need
to.
I
think they just ship them back.
Yeah, I do. If I were a board member, I'd say, well, you know, kind of a cold question. Let's not let him out now, because if we do, we're that starts time running here, and if he follows up, then I don't want to be, you know, responsible. To me, that I would love to be able to count for that.
Well, I don't know. If he follows up, he's going to get revoked.
True.
Follows
up.
You don't have any.
If he follows up while he's on parole, he's going to get revoked.
From the other legislation.
Well, the board is apparently split on it.
Two favorites and one opposed.
Yeah, 2-4 and one opposed. Mr. Terry and Mr. Hitchcock favorites and Mr. Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. Howell?
Newell.
Bill Newell was the winner.
And the Salas is the kids in place?
Well, the one's out of the correction.
So it's a new building table.
Mr. Terry?
If you
want
to do
that,
I'll move that too, but
let's do that. Well, I'm waiting for a motion
of
some kind.
I'll move the table, then. That's what works. I'll move the DPAC.
Mr. Magruder moves 384 to the floor of the DPAC. Quick call it off.
No.
Yeah. Aye.
To me, it's interesting.
Oh, aye.
Aye, it says that it leaves. I mean, no, for tabling?
No.
Aye, doesn't have enough votes. Motion to table, third caller roll.
Hanson?
Aye.
Cat?
No.
Magruder?
Aye.
Aye.
Paul?
Aye. No, I'm sorry. Except no water diversion facility shall be considered except by right previously established or as permitted by the state engineer.
How about the time to go
visit? Upon a finding
well,
that the diversion is necessary to use the diversion subsection 12.
What's the number of guest passenger again?
Because we don't want water
diversion. We've lost that bill, Lou.
Guest passenger.
She's saying the same thing.
Hampton wants enough
to
table
out
there,
I think.
Oh,
no, to get it to the floor.
Well, ask him. the council. I don't know what the rest of that is.
The visit bill is 576.
576.
We're on 39. What is that?
This is the hand and growth bill and fee amendment. See, this is what
all that
goes to me. Goes right in here.
It is me.
576.
Well, yeah, but the same sections are there, and it seems to me that they're giving the permission up to the present law, so it's absolutely there's an absolute prohibition against it. It doesn't give anybody the discretion. And Sid's amendment would give the state engineers the discretion, and this does too, I think. But don't
this says except as. There's no except that right here. Except by a right previously or as permitted by the state engineer. That's water division. Water diversion facility. That isn't it. Because this says no water diversion bank protection works or dredge.
Well, here's bank protection works or dredge.
I really freaked my
life. 2328.
Except as permitted. Here we go. Approved by the state land board upon a finding. This leaves it in the hands of the division.
Shall be.
2028, the form of the due pass as amended.
20th. Do you have the passenger law?
Okay.
It will take effect January 1, 1975.
Question.
It won't help.
There was any fun wanting to be here?
Just debated the debate on the issue.
Where is he?
We debated it 10 times.
All he said is if we needed his vote for Congo, we don't need his vote for that.
We'll make it a few more. We'll make it a definite order of business tomorrow at 1:00.
Why don't we just vote for Congo?
Yeah. He's either got the vote or he doesn't.
Mr. Bunn wanted to be here.
Well, take the jury of the committee. Yeah. Heck, you don't hold up votes for me.
Yeah. If you request them, you know.
That's the reason why he wanted to be there.
Let's get this straight now.
Okay. No.
Sid, my concern is this. This area is still going to be in the scenic water. And the division of land has control supervision over that. Now, if we threw this portion, or this one item of control into the engineer's office, and we have two agencies managing the same area of river. And I'm wondering if we pass 3275 out, if we shouldn't amend it so that it puts the permit in the division of land with approval of the land board like it is in this one. How do you feel about that?
Okay.
How's the rest of the committee feeling?
Whatever. Okay with Smith, okay with me. He's been through the
all topic. I know is that they have the state engineer has approved this and the highway department has approved this and the recreational people have approved it. That's what this thing misworded, you're gonna have to
well that's gonna go out screwed up.
Yeah, but that'll go out. Well, then wouldn't that move faster?
You
wouldn't correct it?
I don't know.
That's all right. Isn't it?
Well, they have to put a word in there.
Yeah,
all right.
So,
Nobody, do you want to call the front desk and see where 2024 is?
From Marvel.
Can I make a suggestion? Check this out and. Okay. And then we can look around the desk tomorrow morning and move something else out.
That's how
Well,
what's the quickest and best way here?
got it is that substantial immediate damage will occur if there's the bank protection work or dredging. Occur if you don't allow these things. If you don't allow the dredging, if you don't allow the dredging,
what this means then is that what this reads is you have to find that, Jerry, you have to find that immediate and substantial damage will occur if you don't take the action.
I think that must be what you're trying to say.
I think that's what you're saying.
Because it would be a peculiar sort of finding that substantial and immediate damage.
That's not what it says. That is a problem. We've got to clear the channel periodically.
I think it's that way.
But it puts them out of business as far as using gravel bar.
That they said what they mean to that. For your reflection. It will occur if they don't allow the dredge.
Go back on the record. I have your attention. We determined that this is drawn correctly. 2024 is drawn correctly. It's just that it requires that there be a finding that substantial immediate damage will occur before they can go ahead and permit dredging. So it wouldn't solve your problem. This amendment. And it's at E&E right now. So what's the word?
The landlord is acceptable instead of the engineer if you want to change the contract to 75. So to make them uniform.
Without the finding requirement, how would it work administratively?
Well,
without the finding immediate, whatever.
Charge is that the highest and best use is recreation fish and wildlife. Free flowing characteristics shall be maintained. No dam, reservoir, or other water impoundment shall be constructed or placed during the permission. And then it goes on, no water diversion bank protection works for dredging shall be constructed and used except as permitted by state engineers or cities. So the permit would have to be consistent with the policies that are under this section, which is to keep the river open for fish and recreation. So the permit to remove the gravel would have to be consistent with the other uses, the recreation, fish, and wildlife. But you wouldn't have to have this finding of emergency. 2020.
four require?
Yeah. Is there any good reason for this finding? For requiring a finding of emergency order?
Substantial and immediate damage will occur. You have to find that before you can permit the removal of the gravel.
You don't want gravel. You don't want the gravel being dug all over
the scenic
river.
Right.
They're taking
the
gravel out
of the river.
Substantial immediate damage will occur. The damage will be there.
Can't wait for it.
Wait for the death. In that permit, correct. I would go along with whatever's reasonable.
Well, what's the committee thinking? Should we leave it up to the state engineer?
Yeah.
Or should we leave it up to Division of Land?
What do you say, Sid? Do you have any preference?
They're all agreeable to it, so it doesn't matter. Let's make it uniform. The land board, isn't it?
Change state engineer to division? Division is identified as division state land.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it says identified for the purposes of another statute, so.
Oh.
That's 541-605, we need to.
We have to say division of state land.
Yeah.
Change state engineer to division of state land?
Oh, no.
Any objection to that amendment?
I'll object to the record. We do,
we don't have enough votes.
Let's
vote.
So, yeah. It's also
abysmal. Okay, well, anyway.
Well, we have 4-1, so that's good. That's the amendment. Are you going to vote against it?
Are you happy now with this?
I disagree with a lot.
Fair dismissal appeal for it. Mr. Hampton moves 3275 as amended the floor of the due pass.
Yeah, that's what
Kirk, call the roll. Put on your mask and stand if it doesn't make it.
No, it isn't. Will you carry it to New York?
Everything goes. Jordan, I'll carry it if it doesn't make it. Let's look at, what was that?
Conjugal.
This is another one of the bad bills, isn't it?
What was it, 5?
76. They give you a fee for artificial they're doing, but then only get in.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The mother's name rights as father to bring action for the deduction of daughter.
You may want to refer your testimony on this bill.
This one, 576.
576, I don't know where it is, because we didn't have this one.
What bill are we on?
All right, 576. Somebody said it might cost $1 million.
1.5 million,
if I am. $20 outside. I talked to the fellows out at the corrections plant. And they're getting another poll because they say the old poll wasn't right. They all won. And I noticed there was something in the paper with it. The penitentiary.
This would only allow a family, right?
No, one adult, only inmates visiting.
Idiots. So they all
want
it. This will take care of that.
Take care of what?
The first poll was
3 years old. Yeah. That's what they were complaining about.
And what was the result of the first poll?
Apparently, there weren't that many in favor of it.
Now they want it.
Apparently, they want it.
Yeah, I'm because whatever you want for a visit, this bill will give it to you.
So we've got to do something with those girls that we're going to unemploy after we
no,
pass
no,
this off.
Seriously.
The bill certainly does have fiscal implications.
It does.
Fiscal
well, we can always refer it to ways and means.
That'll kill us.
Well, that's before that. Now we should get referred to ways and means, but your way won't do it.
Did anybody testify why this never went to ways
They probably figured the house was good.
Put it out for bid and let Ginger and Spice bid on it.
Well, like we sometimes do, rather than saying it's a ways and means.
Why couldn't they just buy them?
First, they sent it over to the substance.
It already has a subsequent referral.
I move to amend the motion by striking the word swift, a due pass recommendation. So just be referring to ways and means. That's my amendment.
That means you're
waiting
to be on the bill.
That's better than I could have. You always were good with words.
You're right. Go along with Representative Hampton. I prefer to just put the senior and do the task not.
Third call roll on the amendment, which is the ways and means with no recommendation.
Aye.
Yeah. No.
The amendment. Now we have to vote on the main motion. That's
the point.
The ways and means with no recommendation.
When a person gets jailed for something, it seems like you're going to take away.
Let's call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Goes with the means. Look at 377.
What?
377.
Oh, we're going to take that one?
I don't know. I've got to look at it.
I've got a note on that. There was an error. That came out of another committee there.
I don't have gotten all 377.
Yeah, we've just received that. I don't think the bills are in the book yet.
What about 378 here?
Yeah, I have 378.
Oh, yeah, somebody
did
want
378
out.
I think this is
the actual. Oh, that's the silver
line. Yeah.
Yeah, the guys want that, too.
The guys wanted that. No, seriously.
378.
I received several requests.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? Because I don't know. Their main job out there is to get the guy back on the street in some form that will be a benefit to society and won't be coming right back in again. Don't you think that perhaps there should be some determination made by the administrator if it really is going to be a disservice to the guy?
The committee approved that in Senate Bill 80. We had the same restriction in this section of Senate Bill 80. That is, that it had to be approved by the administrator of the correction committee.
Now, were these guys going to retain their voting rights in the district that they came And I'd like to move to amend the bill. And I'll amend it on the municipal, amend it on the summary on the front. I'd like to allow them to run for a full public office.
Can. Oh, and that's may not.
How would they serve?
Probably a lot better than you would have been on work Friday.
Will you vote for this? Hey, Nick, will you vote for this if we put that in?
Mr. Magruder moves that on line 14 of page 2 we delete sub A.
No.
Further discussion?
I just want to say one thing. The problem is that it seems like we're putting back all the rights, or whatever you want to call it, that a person has. But the point is, when it's going to get to the point if it continues much longer, that there's going to be no difference between being in jail and being out. And so that kind of bothers me.
The amendment is to delete line 14 on page 2. Clerk, call the roll.
No.
Further amendments? The chair would note that on page 5, line 21, we have to insert Court of Appeals to be consistent with the bill that passed on both houses.
So moved.
Objection to that amendment, so ordered.
Move the bill to Florida. The due pass recommendation is amended. Where do we put Court of Appeals?
We couldn't serve as a personal representative. We had JT and the Court of Appeals, and the Senate deleted JT.
What would happen if it convicted Sal Moran or Warren? No, they were.
Clerk, call the roll on Senate Bill 378. To the floor is amended with a due pass. Yes. Carries and passes and carries the bill.
Just one question. How do you campaign on the people in the penitentiary?
Direct mail.
Direct mail.
Tell radio for you.
Senate Bill 39.
I don't see this directly down as well.
Did you ask for it?
No, I didn't.
Well, I got you noted down that you wanted it.
I wanted somebody to request it now.
I'll carry it.
We've done everything today.
Senate Bill 39.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Dick, how do you stand on it? The guest passenger, pure social.
We're not talking about guest passenger. That's your order of business at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Senate Bill 39, is it okay? Dick?
Yeah, that's the amendment to Senate Bill 224.
No?
From the last session.
What's the conflict with 2142?
I think it's just a technical thing. I have to check it. Yeah. I don't even show that has full houses.
Clerk, call the roll on Senate Bill 39 to the floor with a due pass.
We'll pick those up automatically through the conflict.
What's wrong with
meeting
where
it is?
You've got a problem between giving the permit and enforcing the permit. You need to put it all under the same hat.
Aye.
Okay, that's 2142.
Yeah.
approve? Cass, aye.
Rudy.
Aye.
Mark.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
All right, motion carries, unanimous consent, comes off of Rudy O'Carroll.
Who carries?
How about Senate Bill 48?
Yeah, how about Senate Bill 48?
Mr. Magruder carry if it comes off. Oh, vote here, 1, 2.
For what?
2535.
Well,
2535.
We'll soon find out.
I moved the table.
I remember.
Well, the bank bill, you know, the gift tax and the inheritance tax.
We're looking for the due tax recommendation.
It already has amendments to that.
It has amended, right?
Oh, yeah, we got good amendments. Good
I
amendments.
Don't see why we need it.
We don't need it.
This is the gift tax.
Gift tax isn't so bad, but if I give you that, you'll try for the other one, too.
Aye. Aye.
Mark?
No.
Wilson?
Aye.
All right, motion carries.
No, we don't.
Same thing on 2536 to the floor with the due pass is amended.
Who is that we go to?
How are you on 2020?
I'm on 2020.
Okay. What's 2020?
Jeez,
if we can just get it out of committee.
That's how well you can see.
First call of the roll on 2536.
Aye.
I don't agree.
Yeah. Magruder?
2020. 2536. Unit price?
Mark.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Aye. Lost.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
2535. Put on your nap. Thank you.
We stand up
for
it.
I'm glad you were cheering
because
you're in a dangerous mood.
What's the number of that obscenity bill?
That's the agenda.
That's the only one that counts.
Water.
We haven't seen the exhibit.
Guys, when the guy came up with his suitcase.
Senate Bill 193.
Senate Bill 193.
Here we go.
Can't we just do this whole thing together? Put it on.
Does this only apply to checks in a particular transaction that was, like if they're bouncing or
NSF check?
The subject of a criminal investigation.
Not gonna just buy anything, it wouldn't be limited to NSF or to
could it be the whole account then? Look at
that. I used to think that the Senate was a source of nothing but calling.
Well, you just have to get your bank account.
This was at the request of.
For use cash. Yeah.
Senator Carson.
No bank.
Is there a committee wish to take any action on the bill today?
There was some question on the word and at that circle.
Yeah, that has to come out. We've already agreed on that.
Unless the court comes through it, I guess it's too late in session.
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm trying to clean it up a little. What concerning the check, you know?
I think we have it. I'll move the table.
I'll get out my serious pencil here.
Clerk, call the roll on tabling, Senate Bill 193.
Hanson.
No.
Cass?
Aye.
Magruder?
Aye.
Mark?
No.
Coulter?
Aye.
Aye, motion failed.
Can we be clear about, could we have some language prepared that would make it clear that we just want to limit it to the particular transaction that was involved and not...
It says bank records concerning the check.
Yeah, but that's, I don't know what that means.
It would mean any record the bank has pertains to the check or the account that it was drawn against.
Or the account.
Yeah.
So
that would be the record,
well,
the account.
Yeah, I'd have to relate to the account.
It would be the whole account. Didn't see the...
Well, see, you have to, when you're... Well, see, the bank man would have to bring to court his record to show that there was insufficient monies in that account when the check was drawn. Governor wants this bill?
No, he was just...
Ed, does the governor want this bill?
I don't know. He was acting. I don't see him having it off. I was just telling him that it was a much broader bill that was introduced. The Senate committee backed it off a great deal. Well, we don't care if we have to look at that.
Is there a motion?
Okay,
let's call a roll on Senate Bill 193 to the floor with a Duke pass. Take a handout on line 9 as amendment. Clerk, call the roll.
And come down on line 9.
About the check. Any issue? Reluctantly, aye.
Cass? No. Magruder?
No.
Mark?
Aye.
Wolfson?
No.
Aye, motion failed. I guess we're not going to get any more done today.
Yes. How about Senate Bill 408? There's a little comment.
48?
408. But darn Barney.
Darn Barney.
Darn Barney.
God bless you.
We had some amendments proposed, too, to this, which we don't have pulled, we don't know what's coming up. But there was at least one set of amendments, plus we have a technical problem. To cure the problem of the submersible swamp.
Let's look at 494 then over there. This is a senior judge.
Move to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
There's a problem on page 3, line 12. We need to fill in the name of the judge. No,
I'd like to.
The only difference I can see in this and what it is now is that if he accepts that designation, he can be assigned without his consent.
Well, no.
It doesn't have to be sworn in.
Oh, with his consent.
Yeah,
with
it has to be with his consent.
Yeah.
I'd like to on
1-8. That's the case now, isn't it?
You have to reappoint him so he can carry it each time. This way he can carry this card around his pocket and whenever they
call him up and say, hey, run over to...
Yeah, he'd be available for assignment without redesignating him.
Might be old doctor.
Move forward.
I'd like
you have an amendment? What's your amendment?
On line 8, I'd like to delete the entirety of line 8 on line 9, first two words, section 4. So the new language would be a judge who retires from the district court, circuit court, or in tax court, court of appeals, or Supreme Court of this state shall be designated senior judge of state or until he's so certified by the Secretary of State.
You want to delete the requirement of 12
years? I have one other question. Do you necessarily have to include retirement? What happens if the judge gets D after 5 terms?
Well, I think retired here doesn't mean you're going formally through collecting retirement pay, does it? Ed, does it mean that?
I don't know in that paragraph. Of course, there is discussion later of retirement, but I'm not sure we're on that. I mean, in a narrow interpretation, it's got a few problems.
What?
You might say a judge who
ceases to labor.
That'd be like a lot. You might say a judge who has served.
Well, Ed, they don't retire if they have less than 12 years service, do they?
No. And you can only retire with 12 years service if you're, is it 870 or 65? I forgot. But, normal, you have to have 16 years to retire. But if you've reached a certain age, you can retire after 12 years. I can't remember the 65 or 70. Retire probably means retire here, but I'm not absolutely sure.
Well, if he's going to get off, he's going to shut down. You wouldn't want to have that individual. A lawyer who left the court that went in private practice wouldn't be the sort you'd want to have as a senior judge, would you? Maybe you would. I hope you set a special order to the deal.
I would think most judges who have retired have done just that, except maybe in the case of Judge Dixon, who is now in active practice.
Well, he was 65, had not served, but he actually retired.
Yeah. Most of them retire, don't go back in active service, do they?
Judge Duncan, you know, from this county, is in practice.
Well, the motion is to delete line 8 and the word such courts on line 9. So the effect of it is you no longer have to have 12 years service.
I'd be much happier if we could figure out some language to substitute the word retire.
Well, that's what they're trying to, that's the resource they're trying to tamp, though, or judges who've retired. I think they mean formally retired, is what I think they meant by this bill. But we have to pull out the minutes and check the testimony of the court administrator on this. He was the only one who spoke on this bill, as I recall.
For call or roll on the amendment.
Would be included if it means that the entire in the year.
No, not on this amendment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll vote no.
Don't drop the gavel at the
Somebody move this to the floor with a percent. Mark moved Senate Bill 494 to the floor with a due pass. The recommendation, first call the roll.
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Cass?
Aye.
Ritter?
No.
Clark?
Aye.
Wolfert?
Aye.
Aye, motion carries.
Aye.
Unanimous consent, thumbs off. Motion carries, thumbs off. We'll let Mr. Wolfert carry it. We'll let Mr. Wolfert carry it if it comes off. 495 is a quickie that the Supreme Court has requested. Yeah, we're getting there.
Move forward, do fast.
This allows a petition. The Supreme Court will review without having to go through the petitioning of the Court of Appeals for a review. Is that about it?
Yeah, it's long
save
overdue.
That extra step.
Western. Outstanding.
First call the roll. Who made the motion? Mr. Hanson. First call the roll. Senate Bill 495 to the floor of the due pass.
Glenn?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Cass?
Aye.
Ritter?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Wolfert?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Unanimous consent. Comes off. Mr. Buck can carry that one. 408. Do you have some amendments?
Chairman, I don't actually have an amendment. There was a question of a dangling comma in the existing language.
A dangling comma?
On line 16 of the bill. Apparently, they're referred to with a special note out of Section 20, Chapter 594, Oregon's Law, 1969, resulted in a change from tide and overflow to submersible. And submersible, thus, on that line, should be separated from swamp by a comma. This was found by a sharp-eyed young lawyer who works with me. I just think he hasn't found it, frankly. But the Senate, it was brought to Senator Brown. Committee's attention, and they chose not to act on it, and I gather Mr. Brayman brought it to this committee's attention when he testified on the bill, so I just bring that back before you in case.
Well, I got to know if you left out some words. I don't know what words you left out.
Well, actually, to bring it in line with apparently 1969 law, a comma after submersible to do it.
Well, it would read submersible swamp or school land.
Rather than
the all that.
Oh.
The submersible land swamp land.
The comma. This lets them put the water main under the Willamette River without a permit.
What it does, basically, if there is dredging, if the Corps of Engineers, for example, dredges up, buries a municipality's outfall, for example, this would do two things. It provides a 25-foot easement for those outfalls, and then in the case of that burial where the city would have to extend the outfall to get back to the main water, a developer who used that newly created land would be charged the cost of that extension.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Magruder moves Senate Bill 408 as amended to the floor of the DFAS recommendation.
Call
roll.
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Cass?
Aye.
Ritter?
Aye.
Paul?
Mark?
Aye.
Wolfert?
Aye.
Mr.
Chairman? Aye. Consent calendar. If it comes off, who wants to carry it? Very exciting.
Here.
No. Not my
area.
Mark. Mr. Wolfert carries it comes off. We're adjourned.
I changed my rose now. Too late.
Staff when you just table. We just have one little form to fill out.
I move that we put everything on the unanimous tabling calendar, and then the people that want bills can come and ask us to table them. If no one comes, then we don't have to do anything with it.
House Judiciary? Order?
Just about. Where's the other members?
They're probably eating lunch.
Mark's gonna be here.
He's talking to somebody.
The agenda is.
What kind of chairs do you have in your caucus room?
Why don't we?
Is this your caucus room?
Yeah.
The Holy of Holies.
Take a look at 3061.
Okay. I'd like to call for the order for the day for the agenda.
Public Warfare Division may require the recipient or any other.
Well, it's a little difficult when these people don't put their names. Are these your amendments? 3061.
We always refuse to accept them.
Some of them still aren't named. I have mine anyway.
Bob Stoltz had some of this, didn't he?
Yeah, I marked. Yeah, okay, I marked. Also in section one, now wasn't it brought up that should read in line 6, made part of ORS 416.510 to 416.610, rather than just made a part of ORS chapter 416?
The other guy changed to ORS chapter 16.
Yeah, it's 510 to 5 something. That's what I have here. I made a note.
Call the house. It should be 416. That's just 625.
I'm going to change 2 to 5 around section 2 to 4.
Well, welcome.
But my understanding was that just stating ORS chapter 416 was not what you wanted to do.
I don't believe it's ORS 416.510 to 610.
That's what you want to make it a part of.
Anything exciting comes up, be sure to have a call.
The rest of 416 has got the act over the Senate, I believe.
That's the interesting
answer. The rest of 416 has got all the possibilities.
Oh, so this is all we've got anyway.
I think that's what it's going to end up.
It's 2 pages. Well, 3 pages or something.
That has to pass the House.
Well, it wouldn't hurt, and it would be more precise to say Sections 2 to 5 of this act are added to and made a part of ORS 416.510 to 416.610.
Because whether it's navigable or not, it gives the stage to.
And then with the new Section 5.
July 1st.
That laws or amendment actually just incorporated the Workers' Compensation Statute. Exactly the same, except it says Public Welfare Division instead of, or it says recipient instead of injured workmen.
Well, I got a couple of problems with this, Bill. Number one, there doesn't appear to be any time period as to how long the beneficiary has to make up his mind.
Well, Bob, didn't you prepare some amendments to 3061?
Sounds to me like it did. Just happened to have some amendments to 3061.
You do.
Just happens.
The only carry around is exciting.
Yeah, these are the ones that I was thinking of.
That's a good secret agent. I'm curious to figure out why they're under the shower.
We got to go back in and go education is done. Can't have two committees out at one time.
Okay. Well, before we leave, have we got enough to get the guest passed?
No. So let's adopt these amendments before we go back.
We'll just go off the record now. We won't adjourn each time.
Let's finish the hearing on 862, Thomas. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 5 now, and I'll go through this as quickly as I can because I know you're in a hurry. Yesterday, you remember, I described the difference between the two possible rulings that the Oregon Supreme Court could come out with. This bill, 862, was introduced supposedly to clarify and resolve the question of which of those two theories of law would apply. But that's not what the bill really does. If you'll read Section 2 carefully, it says that an owner of property is entitled to compensation if his access from a street is materially restricted. And I'm referring to the first sentence, which is a quite long one. So if you go down to line 13, it's thereby prohibited or materially restricted. And that applies even if the owner still has reasonable access to the property. At least that's the inference there. As long as there's a material restriction, the owner's entitled to compensation, regardless of whether he still has reasonable access. So this is not really a clarification. It's a change in the law which benefits the property owner and lessens the position of the public body. Now, it's important to see the difference between the present law in Oregon and the new law proposed here. The present law is based on the principle that when a person dedicates a street, as was done in the 1850s in Portland, he intends that the street will be used for those methods of travel that are appropriate to the changing time. The case of Mars versus City of Salem, which I discussed involving parking meters, talks about this, as does the case of Crowpitzer versus City of Portland. Following this principle to its conclusion, an owner acquires and develops property always knowing that he is subject to a change in street use as the times change. When the use changes, the owner is not entitled to compensation because he voluntarily assumed the risk of change. Now, I think if you remember Jack Day's testimony yesterday, he and I have a difference on this. And I assure you, his position was that when a person builds, he in a certain sense gets a vested right. I think if you read the Morris and Crowpitzer cases, you'll at least see that the present law in Oregon is that the person takes subject to the possibility of changing streets. The only question under Oregon law now is whether the dedicator intended to give up all access rights except those available to the general public, or whether he intended to reserve the personal right to reasonable access to his property. This bill abandons the principle on which the present law is based and adopts a new one. The new principle is that the street dedicator did not intend the street to be used for those methods of travel appropriate to the changing time. Instead, he intended to give abutting property owners the right to free street usage or require compensation for a change by constructing improvements that rely on a particular type of usage. That really states what the issue is that this bill is addressed to. The invalidity of this new principle is made obvious by the narrowness of the bill. If the principle is valid, the bill should apply to any restrictions of access imposed on any property by any governmental body if there is an injury. Now, admittedly, in some cases there might not be, so there would not be a right to compensation. This would require the payment of compensation any time a restrictive traffic regulation, for instance, no parking, parking meters, causes a measurable injury. Obviously, there would be a tremendous uproar from the states, cities, and counties if this legislature gave serious consideration to such a bill. In fact, this bill, Senate Bill 862, originally was broader and did create an uproar, so it was amended to its present narrow state. Now its benefits are intended to be limited to only two property owners in this state. Nevertheless, the bill sets a dangerous precedent, and you can be sure that others will be coming in future years to expand the bill to protect their personal interests against needed traffic regulations. And I think that was one of the serious objections raised by the city of Beaverton, and I know the committee has a letter from the city of Salem which raises the same objection.
I feel that perhaps the effect of the bill might be to convince the local governing body to perhaps use a little more planning and discretion in their planning and regard to the effect on budding properties. Can you do something like that?
Are you referring to this particular case or in general?
Well, in this particular case and the finding the fact that the
well, I would assure you that a good deal of planning and thought has gone into this, and that it was looked at. Everybody knew it was a problem, but there's just no way this problem can be avoided and have a feasible, really well-functioning transit mall. It's just, I mean, that's the conclusion that was reached, and I think that's a valid conclusion. I haven't yet explained why TriMet is interested in this bill, since it's the city's ordinance that restricts the access, and under the bill it would appear that the city would be liable for the damages. TriMet has agreed to compensate the city for any liability the city has to abutting property owners for loss of access, and this is because TriMet is the body who has initiated the transit mall. This means that TriMet will be paying the owners of the Congress Hotel and Pacific Building if they are entitled to compensation. Now, to avoid creating a false impression, and I mentioned this yesterday, I must tell you that TriMet hopes to get 2/3 federal funding for construction of the transit mall. However, even if TriMet is successful in getting federal funding, 1/3 of the cost of Senate Bill 862 will come from TriMet, which means from the payroll taxpayer's pocket. I would just mention, I don't know what the amount of damages in this would be, but a lot of figures have been thrown around and saying that people talk of over $1 million, which means 1/3 of that coming from TriMet taxpayers' pockets, or the alternative would be from increased fares or reduced services.
Well, it would actually cost the TriMet taxpayers less if you could just take property without paying for it, too, wouldn't it?
Well, certainly it would.
So really, whether it costs the taxpayers more or less is not the real question, is it?
Well, I think the question is, if you have a, assuming this is a police regulation and not a taking of property, which is our position, and I believe would be the position of the Supreme Court, the question is, when you adopt a police regulation, do you compensate someone who is injured because you have adopted the regulation?
Okay. If you assume that. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's inherent in the bill because they refer to whether or not acting pursuant to its police powers or condemnation authority. I think there's some concession that at least there's a question there.
Has anyone doubted that there is a question? I've never heard anyone question that there is a question.
Mm-hmm.
I think both parties are agreed on it.
Yes, I'm sorry. Well, when Jack was talking yesterday, he referred to the fact that this was a taking, but there are some cases where you can take property without having to pay compensation. That's not right. There are no cases where you have to pay if you take. The question is whether we're taking.
You agree there is a question, right?
Yes, I disagree on what the question is.
Okay, but you agree that the question, whatever it is, could be decided by a court.
Yes, absolutely.
You also agree that the question, whatever it is, could be decided by this legislative assembly.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. I my contention is that this bill does not decide the question that now exists. It decides a different question.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'll try to follow it.
Okay.
Could I ask you to ask a question there? You mentioned $1 million figure. This indicates to me that there may be some substantial loss to the property owners involved there. And yet, when we're talking about that figure, you still indicate that there's no consideration given to what that loss might be.
Well, let me go on, because I'm going to propose something of an alternative. That's not our figure. That's the figure that I heard, not from the people here, but from people on the other side earlier, before this bill was introduced. That's a guess on a maximum amount, dealing on my part. Having stated TriMet's general objections to the bill, I would like to address some specific drafting problems. On page 2, line 6, the bill uses the phrase principal aspect. One of the principal aspects of which is the storing of motor vehicles is the providing of lodging to travelers using private conveyances. Now, this creates, in the sense of adopting a bill which is to clarify a problem, I think this creates some ambiguity. For example, in a specific building, the storage of motor vehicles is something that is collateral to the main function of the building, which is an office building. It also has some commercial establishments on the first floor. So I question whether storing motor vehicles there is a principal aspect of a specific building. The bill uses the phrase public conveyance and private conveyance. First, I'm not sure whether a conveyance is different than a motor vehicle. I haven't seen the term conveyance elsewhere in Oregon law. Second, I think a taxi cab is a private conveyance, but Jack Hay, when he testified last week, indicated that he himself wasn't sure whether a taxi cab was a public or private conveyance. The bill is limited to restrictions of access by a city or mass transit district. There's no reason why the state and county should not be included. Now, in the statement that Jack Hay gave me yesterday, he indicated that there already was legislation covering the state and county. However, if you read that, all that refers to it is the owner's right to access. We can see that there is a right to access. The question is, what is the right? And the only bill that refers to that in any greater detail, the only statutory section, says that the owner has a right to reasonable ingress and egress, which is the position that we've taken as the one that would be the maximum position that we think the Supreme Court would follow.
Aren't there some statutes with respect to counties now that provide for compensation if the taking of access causes a diminution in the value of the property?
No. It has to be a taking of access. That's right. The question is, what is a take property? The Supreme Court has ruled in the case of the City of Portland case, or an investment company, that when you blocked access to one street and left reasonable access elsewhere, that was not a taking. The statutes you're referring to only cover cases where there is, in fact, a taking. And under that Oregon case.
So the difference between the taking then has an extra meaning.
Yes,
that's
correct. Okay. The first sentence in Section 2, this is quite technical, is if you read it, it's a peculiar sentence, and it would be better off if it were broken down so that it had subparts. On page 2, line 13, the bill uses the phrase materially restricted. That's if the access is prohibited or materially restricted. Now, there's a problem here, because it's my, I don't know how familiar you are with the Congress Hotel, but it's my understanding that the Congress, one of the problems the Congress faces with this law is that the Congress has a close to marginal operation now. And that the concern is that if the transit mall causes even a small amount of damage, that it's going to push the hotel under. Now, if material restriction refers to loss of access per se, just less cars can get there, that's one thing. If it refers to the amount of damage, on the other hand, I'm not sure that it would cover the Congress Hotel situation. I'm not sure how great the damage would be there. So that leaves the problem.
Doesn't that speak to existing access by the general public is thereby prohibited materially?
Yes, it does now, but if you'll turn to the last page, Exhibit 4, and if you'll look up at the third block down from the top, you can see on the 5th Avenue side is the Benjamin Franklin parking lot there. On the third block down from the top where it says Ben Franklin Park, there's in that parking lot, there is now an exit on the Southwest Oak. That's where the entrance is. There's not one on Fifth. However, if you interpret materially restricting access as meaning not restricting the profitability, but as restricting literally the access, in that case, even though there's not an exit on Fifth Avenue, this bill excludes, since that is a parking facility which depends on automobiles, this bill would award them compensation if they could prove that there was a restriction of access on Fifth Avenue, which there would be.
But I'm having a hard time understanding why that would be the wrong thing to do.
Well, okay. What I'm trying to do is say, figure out what materially restricted.
Yeah. Okay. I see. You're going out from.
I have not gotten to. I've discussed the philosophical objections we have. Now I'm getting to the specific technical one.
How could that be clarified? So the distinction, or so the ambiguity you see, would not be present.
Well, it could be done by saying. One of the other objects I'm going to get to, by saying that the restriction would have to be to the access as presently used.
Okay.
No, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, thanks. I didn't mean to hold you up.
That's fine. The next technical objection is that Section 2 leaves up in the air the question whether TriMet may offset against the damages for loss of access any benefits the property receives from being on the transit mall. For example, I'm referring to benefits from having widened sidewalks with landscaping and things like that. This is an important point since the bill makes no mention of a fair market value test as used in condemnation cases. This means that one interpretation could be that the property could end up worth more because it is on a landscape mall with widened attractive people-oriented sidewalk areas, but still receive full compensation because it has lost some motor vehicle access. Now, the reason for that difficulty is the way the first sentence in Section 2 is written, where damage to that property seems to refer to damage from loss of access. This also raises a question as to the measure of damages. Suppose there's a slight impact on the Congress that causes it to go under because it already is marginal. What are the damages? Are they the full value of the property or a minor portion of the value of the property? In other words, do we bear the full brunt of the fact that the Congress has already had problems and is marginal, or do we only bear a small portion of that?
Well, do you think there's that the bill as written would allow seriously the contention that TriMet or the city should bear the full value?
Well, I've been under the impression that the owners of the Congress have been hoping, as a result of this bill, to get the city or TriMet to purchase the property. So I'm concerned that it's not clear.
Oh, okay. Glad you drew me a map. Is there a serious contention to that effect, if that's the real purpose here?
That what? The
purpose of introducing this bill was to cudgel or sort of coerce TriMet or the city to buy the whole building?
I think that if this bill is passed, it creates a good possibility that would be the alternative because of the nature of the building.
Okay.
There's been serious talk about that.
By the owners or occupiers of these buildings, either the Pacific Building or the Congress Building?
Not the Pacific. The Congress has seriously talked to, has at least suggested to the city that they should look at buying it.
Okay.
The last sentence of Section 2 is very vague, and that refers to traffic regulation plans adopted by the city. It appears to base damages on a traffic plan that may or may not be put into effect. That doesn't make sense. Now, I think what they're concerned about there is the fact that one of the possibilities the city has talked about is taking Main Street, if you look on your map, which is the other access to the Congress Hotel, and limiting parking on Main Street. Well, that obviously would be another imposition on the Congress Hotel. However, I don't think that the damages, assuming this bill were to be passed, should be based on something the city might do on Main Street in the future. I think you all know that a lot of plans don't get put into effect.
Well, is the intent of that language to deal with a negative damage factor?
Either way. I think it's intended to go either way, although it's not clear to me that it refers to the sidewalk situation where it would be improving the building because of the sidewalk.
Question, Mr. West?
Well, Chris, couldn't that last sentence then bring in what you were talking about earlier, though, with respect to benefiting the property?
Well, it refers to the traffic regulations plan as being the factor to be considered. Now, I would not interpret widening the sidewalk as being part of the traffic regulation plan. That's my concern. If that's what it means, then that would remove the objection I had to not being able to say we've widened the sidewalk and put in landscaping. Now, if you go to the second sentence in Section 2, it says the fact that other access to the property from a public way is available should not relieve the city or mass transit district from liability unless the other access is reasonably equal to the access prohibited or materially restricted. Now, this may mean that there's no compensation right if the restricted access is replaced by equal access. I don't think that's what it means. I think what it means is, what it seems to me is that access can be cut in half, but not further. That if you leave reasonably equal access to that patron, I think that means you can cut it in half, but not further. If that is what it means, then it appears to conflict with the first sentence of Section 2, which says that you have to compensate for any injury. The next sentence, the third sentence of Section 2, puts the burden of proof as to alternate access on the public body, assuming you left that alternate access provision in. We feel that the owner should have the burden of proof because he knows more technically about the access to his property and what his property needs. Section 10, this is a technical problem, limits the new cause of action to an action against the city. It should cover all bodies liable under Section 2. It should read the city or Mass Transit District if you leave it the way it is, or if you include state and counties, they should go in there too in Section 2. So the cause of action would be against whichever body is responsible for the limitation.
Where would you make the correcting language? In what line?
In line 26, after city, assuming you didn't add states and counties, you would add city or Mass Transit District. You would add or Mass Transit District. And then what happened in this was that sections 1 and 2 were redrafted after the and inserted into the original bill, and they didn't make changes in sections 3 through 6 later. That's why this problem came up. A similar objection, which really I don't think would have to be corrected, but could be, is that it refers to real property throughout that, and it should refer to commercial property since the bill is limited to commercial property. Now, you run into another problem here. Both the Pacific Building and the property held by the Congress Hotel owners front on 5th as well as 6th Avenue. Under this bill, they would be awarded damages for access lost on 5th Avenue, even though other owners in identical situations receive no damages, and this is because they have the peculiar situation on 6th Avenue. Similarly, the bill awards damages even if the entire injury is unrelated to the property's function of storing motor vehicles or lodging travelers using private conveyances. Now, what I'm referring to there is the situation with the Benjamin Franklin surface parking lot, where the entrance is not on the street where we're limiting access. It's on another street. But still, under this bill, they would be entitled to recover compensation. The last specific objection, Section 5 permits the action to be filed up to 1 year after the restricting ordinance becomes effective. This means TriMet could be well into construction of the transit mall and possibly irreversibly committed to a design before the time expires to file the action. This may eliminate any chance for a compromised solution. TriMet's alternative would be to delay construction of the mall and completion of the Clean Air Implementation Program. I have two additional comments in response to the proponent's testimony last week. First, there was a lack of clarity as to whether we had participated in the drafting of the Senate amendments to the bill. And I want to make it clear that we didn't participate in the drafting. I was permitted to see the amendments after they were drafted, but I didn't have the opportunity to propose any changes in the amendments on the Senate side. Second, which I mentioned yesterday, is a lack of clarity as to what the city's position was, and the city has no position, neither in opposition or support. Now, I have drafted some amendments, which I'll give you, which address not the gut philosophical question, but some of the technical questions. I've made it units of local government rather than cities and mass transit districts. I've changed the burden of proof on alternate access to the owners of the property. I made the technical change in Section 3 involving cities and adding mass transit. So I didn't add mass transit districts, I add units of local government, since that's what I've done elsewhere in the amendment. I reordered the first sentence of Section 2 to make it a little clearer. I didn't make any substantive changes in that. And I also added the definition of public conveyance to make it clear that taxi cabs were private conveyances and not public conveyances. You could go the other way on that if you wanted to. And finally, I changed the time for filing the action to 1 year after the ordinance is adopted. Now, the proponents raised a question there, which is a fair one, how can they prove their damages if the city adopts an ordinance as it did, which is not effective until 1 year after the ordinance is adopted. I think they could cover that situation. It would be just like a condemnation case where they would have to go in and prove their loss, as they do in some condemnation cases where there's a severance without actually having the severance having taken place. Now, I also, those don't address the gut question that I have, and I did draft an amendment, which I just have handwritten out here, which would change Section 2 to what we contend would be the best that the owners could hope for under Oregon law, which would be that they would be entitled to reasonable access. I've also, in that amendment, changed the measure of damages to the difference between the fair market value of the property prior to taking or prior to the restriction and the value after the restriction, and I added in a provision that we would be entitled to account for the benefits to the property from the other improvements we put in.
Where is that amendment?
Well, I'll hand it to you. It's not typed up, but I'll give it to you.
Do you have a question, Mr. Kennedy?
I have a question. You were talking about the when the dedication occurred, there was kind of really a presumption of change in time.
That's
so,
correct.
So then your philosophical viewpoint is that when you buy commercial property, you are going to be restricted at some point in the future, or could be, by whatever may occur, and that generally you as a property owner are not going to be
That's absolutely correct. For example, people back when the streets were dedicated, the main means of transportation was horse and carriage. The city of Portland now has an ordinance, the state has a statute which says the city can prohibit horses from any street whenever it wants. Now, if a person, I suppose, had put a stable in the middle of the city under this bill, or under this philosophy, he would have the right to compensation if the city said you can't ride horses down the street anymore.
I have a question for that. Did the changeover from horses to automobiles really alter people's access to the
I don't know for a fact if there were people who objected to that or not.
What I'm saying though, do you think that, I mean, judging just from what happened, do you think it created more or less access to the commercial property, say, in this particular core area?
Well, the property that depended on, generally, I would say more. As I said, you would have to look if there was a case of somebody with a stable. I don't think he would be entitled to compensation under present law, whether he lost access to his horses or not.
Thank you.
Question?
One quick question. To go to the circumstance of my home, 137th Street, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good old 137th Street. There it is. I get word someday that the county has just shut it off. Can't use it. They say, well, we're going to put it in an alley. Or if I had an alley, you can get there by the alley. Do you think in that situation that the county would owe me justly or injustice any compensation for that?
No.
Taking?
No.
None whatsoever.
And let me, if you're dubious, let me refer. There's a case where someone lost access to a restaurant, his best access. He had two streets. He lost his best street where most of his customers came from. And the Supreme Court of Oregon held he was not entitled to compensation. Now, I don't, if this committee were to go ahead and say, okay, we think that's bad law, we're going to change that for everybody, I think we would be in a different position on that. Our objection, one of our real objections here is that we've been singled out as, for something which nobody else has been singled out for. But I think in your case, as you described, as long as you were left with reasonable access, what a court would find to be reasonable access to your property, then you would be stuck without compensation.
Now that's what you say the law is, but what do you think, in fairness and justice, the law should be there? What do you as an individual
what
think?
What do I think that, I think the law is right. I think it's just like any other, let me refer you to something, I checked this out, are you familiar with the wine distributors bill?
Which one?
Well, it's the one that says that you can't distribute the warehouse. That's a bill that everybody, which openly is designed to spread a customer Safeway stores around to other people. One man has it now. Now, there's a bill where a person is being severely injured, yet he's not getting compensation. We see this as being like any other police regulation like that, where someone, because of the exercise of the police power, is being, you know, he's being damaged. I don't think there's any question. But we don't feel, I feel personally, that that's the price you pay for being part of a governmental society. It happens in pollution cases all the time, you know, when they have to put in pollution devices. Very expensive.
And of course they get a tax credit.
Yes.
Some of them do.
Well, more than that.
What other questions? you very much.
It wouldn't make any difference if I was, say, a crippled person that rode around in an electric cart that, you know, is negotiable only on a paved street and not on a dirt alleyway.
You mean to me, philosophically, I feel much more concerned for you.
But would you change the law for me?
Well, I might.
Why?
Well, because I was more concerned for you because you're a crippled person. Okay. If we were dealing with crippled people, I might feel different, but we're certainly not dealing with crippled people.
Okay. Mr. Magruder has a question.
Oh, sorry. Why are you putting these bus lanes in anyway?
I don't know how familiar you are with the whole TriMet, with the proposal and the Clean Air Implementation Program, but what it calls for is
to accommodate a larger number of people.
Yes, well, it's part of a program which is designed to get more people on the mass transit, to get more people into downtown Portland, to clear out traffic, to get rid of air pollution. What happens is all the people from the park and ride stations, when this program is completed, will be coming in on express busways. Express busways will feed in the 5th and 6th into the transit mall, and they will be able to get into downtown and through downtown quicker. That's the purpose, and to make it more desirable for people to ride mass transit. Yes, absolutely.
We in favor to get the pay tax and take business away from people.
I don't know what he's doing, but some of his colleagues had to fly helicopters from the airport to a hotel because the traffic was so heavy and they would be bringing them to Lake Community in Portland.
Kind of vote no until we plug in some possible technical amendments. Do you feel, Dick, that we need to get it out today? I have no objections of philosophy at all, and I support it, but I just wonder if we couldn't make the bill better by some technical work on it.
I have no objection to not sending the bill out if we can pass another law that says all property will be assessed as if it were not abutted by a street or highway. Pretend that it's out in the... If we can pay taxes one way on it, then I think we ought to get compensation out there.
I don't care. Go ahead with whatever you... I can vote for the bill like it is. I just thought it'd be better to clean it up a little bit.
I move the amendment.
By the first set, sure.
You mean the first set? Okay. Take a look at them. Page 2, line 4. Should after action, unless the context requires otherwise. And insert 1, that'd be the definition for that. definition of commercial property. And the local government. And the definition of public conveyance right here.
Now, on that definition, Mr. Chairman, that would mean that taxi cab would be private.
I think that's what I want.
I think the best thing for us to do is let's delay action on this bill till tomorrow morning, give the proponents an opportunity to look at these amendments and see if they cause any problems as far as they're concerned and get them input here. Hopefully, they can. Between now and tomorrow morning. As far as the technical amendments, is that agreeable with the committee? Mr. Hampton, Mr. Bond, the chair is suggesting that we let the TriMet and the proponents perhaps get together on these proposed technical amendments and take action on them tomorrow morning.
Agreed.
The first order of business. Is that agreeable with the committee?
Yep. So order, you can do that, please, this afternoon. Mr.
Johnson on Senate Bill 399.
Chairman, here not only is my capacity as Attorney General, but also Council of the State Highway Commission. Can't say this bill is also because it does apply to all connections between the states, both like counties and cities. And the League of Oregon Counties isn't supportive of the bill. Frankly, due to oversight, I have not consulted with the League of Oregon Cities. I just did catch their man and said he was not aware of the bill, so they have not taken a position on it. Basically, Mr. Chairman, this deals with condemnation. The problem that we face over, as you know, under Oregon law, if the in a condemnation proceeding, if the party whose land, the property is being condemned, gets a judgment that is higher than the state's offer, then he is entitled to attorney fees and his costs. I think you should also be aware that these are these provisions, and I happen to be a very strong supporter of the concept of payment of attorney fees in condemnation proceedings, and always have been. But I think you should be aware that this is money that is not federally matched. You do not get any federal match for payment of attorney fees in condemnation proceedings, because Oregon is one of the few states that does this. The purpose of this this is a revision of ORS 35.345. To get out of the problem that arises because of the time lag between the time the complaint is filed and the condemnation proceeding and the time the case is tried. And since I came into office 4 years ago, we have tried to adopt a policy and we're trying to convince the Highway Commission that we really had more of a wrestle with the Federal Bureau of Roads to move towards a policy of trying to settle more condemnation proceedings and to cut down the huge expenses that goes into litigation all the time. We are settling many more cases than we have in the past. But there is one hang-up, and a few attorneys, frankly, this bill, I feel, is directed at a few attorneys who, frankly, are taking advantage of this time lag that exists and just simply will not settle on any grounds because they know they can nail us for attorney's fees. what the bill does is the present law requires that we file for 20 days before we file a complaint. We must make an offer, and then if the final judgment exceeds that offer, they get attorney fees plus their all their costs, including appraisal costs. This bill would permit us, would continue that requirement,
but would also permit us to make an offer up to 30 days prior to trial. And if the judgment does not exceed that offer, they would not get attorney's fees. Subject to one condition, and this is a very important condition, it's on lines 22 through 25, if the court finds that the first written offer that was made by the state was not made in good faith, then they would get attorney's fees regardless of what the judgment was. And this is essentially to keep the state from preventing the state from sandbagging the property owner. Put it in simple terms. We have made a study of the cases over the last 2 years. The average time, from the time a complaint is filed until a case is tried, is 9 months, 9.5 months. Some cases go up to 2 years. Well, I think you can understand that the appraisals you would make, and usually our appraisals are made considerably just because of administrative difficulties, are made usually 6 months prior to the time we even make an offer. So you've got quite a large timeline there. And the problem is, of course, the values of property inflate during that period of time. And we make an offer, a year later, the property naturally is going to go up in value. Mr. Les Hampton is here with me. He is our senior condemnation trial lawyer, probably has tried more cases than anyone in the state that I know of, but we very often face the situation where we actually go into court with our own appraisers, starting out trying to prove a value that is higher than what our offer was, because our own appraisers can no longer support that value simply because inflation has increased the value of the property. You have the situation that occurs many times, comparable sales. You've got the comparable sales at the last moment. Does definitely elevate the value of the property. We're not able to rely on that any longer because we are still locked into that early offer. And that's the purpose of Senate Bill 13-299, is to give us a chance to make an offer shortly before trial, so we can't get the case started.
Are there any questions, Mr. Johnson?
I would make one additional comment. We cannot make any definite estimates, but we feel that our general appraisal of this bill is that it would probably save the state about $200,000 if by any.
Any questions?
Well, does the requirement for negotiations enter into this at all? There used to be some talk, I remember when we were in the Uniform Jury Instructions Committee, there used to be talk about putting in the instructions, talk about preliminary negotiations or something. Is there still any such requirement? Or is it?
Well, Lou, I always feel, you know, that's a natural. Don't need to put that in the statute. Any lawyer in his right mind who's representing his client is going to try to negotiate a settlement rather than litigate.
That's true, but I was wondering if it was required.
What is required is that we have to make a prior offer.
Okay, and then that tantamount to a negotiation. If you made the offer and it's refused,
yeah.
Let's have an attorney with the Justice Department and have worked with Highway primarily. Basically, we still have the problem, which is jurisdictional. If there is no negotiations, good faith negotiations, prior to the filing of the complaint, the court has no jurisdiction. We will dismiss the case. So we have a jurisdictional requirement of good faith negotiations to begin with, and then in addition to that, the more practical negotiations in connection with value and cost of the settlement.
Okay, it just doesn't interfere with that in any way.
No, it doesn't change it
anyway. Actually, the practice is, of course, is the right-of-way division of the Highway Department. We really have no jurisdiction over whatsoever. It goes out and negotiates with the property owners to start with. And if those break down, then it's referred to us. figure was really a decision between us and right away as to what that final offer is, right? But at that point, we are in it, but not the initial negotiations are handled by the right away division.
Prior to filing the complaint, the official formal offer is reviewed by the attorney signed by Mr. Johnson as the chief counsel of the Highway Division. At that point, he entered into it and reviewed the formal final offer.
Anything else? If not, thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to be heard on 399, Senate Bill 399?
Is there any opposition to this? Not that I know of. I don't do any of this work, so I'm not too familiar with the procedures. Look reasonable to you?
Yeah, it looks reasonable to me. I don't see the church anybody.
Is there any known opposition to this, please?
What, 399?
Yeah.
No, I have talked it over, I haven't talked it over a lot of the private bar. I did talk it over with John Schwabe, who
does his share.
And John feels very fair for it, though. He feels the state is in an unsettled position. Now, John has been on both sides.
Yeah. I move the floor to pass.
Senate Bill 399 to the floor of the due pass. First call to roll.
Bunn. Hanson.
Aye.
Cass.
Aye.
Bunn.
Aye.
Carpal.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Chairman.
Aye. Motion carries.
Your vote is for no.
Do you vote no? All right, Mr. Hamp, did you carry it?
Okay.
We have a hearing on 3272.
We always notify the sponsors.
Gracie was hanging around here.
All right, let's look at 447 real quick.
Cole.
K-O-L-E. Too bad. Sit down, Dr. Cole.
Senate Bill 447.
447. Are you familiar with the bill?
Yes, I am.
I assume so. Could you just tell us real briefly what it does?
This bill makes three modifications in the statutes having to do with the sexually dangerous offender, the child molester, basically. And these statutes were set up about 10 years ago, combined civil and criminal procedures to deal with the child molester. And I summarized our experience with this program in the written testimony, which I think is provided to you. I could go into that in detail if you'd like. Under the current statute, there are three elements. First, the bill defines the person accused of being a sexually dangerous offender or committed is advised of his rights at each step in the process under this bill. It's a clarification of the person's rights who's accused of being a child molester. That's the first element. Secondly, there's a portion of these statutes that allow a person who considers themselves to be sexually dangerous to admit themselves voluntarily. Yes, there are two procedures. There's a commitment procedure through court, and there's also a voluntary procedure. Under the voluntary procedure at the present time, a person agrees to stay in for at least 10 days after they sign themselves in. There are some rather tight limitations on visits outside the hospital and so on. And these are modified. Also, the age limit is lowered from 21 to 18, consistent with general thinking about lowering of age and majority, in order really to simplify the process and to encourage the person who considers himself to be sexually dangerous to admit himself for treatment. That's the second major area. The third area, I think I need to back up on a little bit. Present time, a person who is determined by a court to be sexually dangerous is sent to Oregon State Hospital, the security program. The time that person is considered ready to leave, there are at present two procedures. One, the hospital superintendent can refer the person back to the committing court, where a hearing will be held and the person can be discharged if the court finds him no longer to be sexually dangerous. A second procedure is to refer the person to the State Board of Parole and Probation for parole. This can be done either by the court or by the superintendent. In fact, the latter procedure is very rarely used. It's cumbersome. It creates certain problems for the Board of Parole, and this is the area of the third modification in this particular bill. References to the State Board of Parole and Probation are removed, and the patient would be allowed then to be placed on a trial visit status by the hospital superintendent. Under present statutes, when hospitalization is no longer necessary, the superintendent does return to either the committing court or to the parole, or to the Board of Parole. Now, duration of parole is indeterminate at present. This, of course, let's see. Well, basically, what we found is that this step really is unnecessary. There are a very limited number of people are involved in this particular set of statutes. There have been roughly 100 people committed over the 10 years of the program. And any person considered for discharge is first reviewed by a hospital disposition board, which consists of the hospital clinical director, the person's physician, and at least two other senior physicians of the hospital. These recommendations, then, the recommendations of the disposition board, then go to the hospital superintendent for his approval before the person is given additional privileges while in the hospital or being considered for placement in the community or for discharge. Follow-up outpatient treatment, then, can be provided through community mental health programs when necessary, as a condition of probation under present, or it could be without that. The amendment would allow for a trial visit process without involvement of the parole board. Now, placement on trial visit would result, again, from a disposition board recommendation, the same process I've described before, would require the superintendent's approval. Adequate controls can be maintained with trial visits. Outpatient treatment could be required, for example, as a condition of trial visits. And this process would facilitate the transition to the community. There are other drastic changes from total institutional care to total freedom for individuals who may as well have spent several years in an institutional setting. Whether a person is placed on trial visit or is released directly from the hospital, and either the sex offender has to go back to the committing court before he's given a full discharge. That's not changed in these amendments. Since only a very small number of people go through the parole board, this creates certain problems for them. They're not familiar with this kind of case. They have to go back. Basically, they have to depend on the disposition board for their recommendation. Also, this creates some delays. The security unit was designed for a capacity of 80. It's consistently running 100 or more patients. There are problems with overcrowding. As you're aware, the Ways and Means Committee has approved and recommended a new security unit in a couple of years. That does not solve our crowding problem at the present. In addition, we think that the present process is not as efficient as it could be. We could accomplish the same end with trial visits that we now accomplish through parole. These are the changes that we're proposing. We do feel this entire set of statutes need a very thorough review. And we are intending to do an intensive study of the various statutes having to do with the sex offender, the dangerous offender, and so on before the next legislative session. These are relatively minor changes, but they are significant changes. We feel they then provide additional protection for the rights of the individual with no additional jeopardy to public safety.
Yeah.
What are the chances for total and total?
Actually, the experiences with this program have been quite good. Dr. Trelevin, who's the director of the security unit, was with me and would have testified the other day. He's not able to be here. But what we found is that these individuals really range the entire range of clinical categories, from being simply inadequate people to being psychotic to alcoholic, and so on. And one deals with whatever the underlying condition is. A good number of these people simply seem immature. They're in special group therapy for sex offenders while they're on the wards there. And the experience in terms of recidivism, in terms of future problems, has been quite good in comparison with other categories of serious offenders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the man who was just killed himself over in Bend after the disappearance of that 8-year boy, and he'd been through the Oregon State Hospital. I read in the paper that he had been twice for sexual offenses.
He had been in the penitentiary for some period of time, and yes, he had been in the hospital some years back, and had been given a complete discharge by the court.
My reason for bringing this up is that during our long, lengthy lunch hour, I picked up the Bend Bulletin. There was an article on the front page that the citizens over there have organized to do something about the problem, because presumably they're assuming that boy that was found killed was killed by the man that killed himself. And it had been sexually abused. Anyway, two senators and one representative were quoted on the front page as having said that they were going to do their best to enact the law that Don tells me is in California, which would require sexual offenders to register before they go into a community. One of the complaints of the citizens over there is that the police did not know that this man was there. Now, my reason for bringing this up is if this passes out and it hits the floor and somebody asks whether that was considered as an amendment, we should be able to say it was discussed.
The Willamette Law Journal did a very thorough review of this program a year ago. I provided a copy of that to the committee here. There are many issues. These statutes combine criminal procedures and civil procedures in a somewhat bewildering way, in my viewpoint. And they also do not provide for a really effective mechanism for the gradual transition. As I pointed out before, I think this all-or-none thing is a very drastic thing. And if you're familiar with the parole board, you're aware that they really have the manpower to provide only extremely limited supervision. I'm personally of the opinion that there's got to be a better way involving both a kind of a probationary process as well as ongoing outpatient treatment. I think we have to get into this area, but I think it would be very unfortunate to be precipitated into action because of this, you know, very, very sad incident. But this particular bill does not speak to that issue as such.
Now, you participated in the drafting of this.
Yes.
Do you have any difficulty with, and I'm not trying to rock the boat here on as far as the bill is concerned, but do you have any difficulty with the definition of sexually dangerous person that is now defined in 426.510? A sexually dangerous person means one not insane, who by a course of repeated misconduct in sexual matters has evidenced such lack of power to control his sexual impulses as to be dangerous to other persons of the age of 12 or under, because he is likely to attack or otherwise inflict injury or pain on the objects of his desire.
That definition was the result of some very specific incidents some 10 years ago when people were looking for a better way to both protect society and hopefully to treat rather than simply punish these individuals. It's the way it's defined, it's the way we've lived with it. It wasn't something the division asked for, but in fact it turned out much better than we expected. We've been able to, I think, work with this population in a reasonable way. I think, as I mentioned before, the definition also needs to be looked at as well as the procedures, and this is something we propose to do next biennium. It's livable at the present time. It's a very discrete special population they're talking about, and it's because of society becomes so tremendously concerned about the population.
Well,
Other questions? Thank you, Doug. Any wish to take any action?
I move Senate Bill 447 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Paul moves Senate Bill 447 to the floor to pass recommendation. Further discussion?
One moment, please.
Mr. Hanson?
Yeah, he has a question.
It says it repeals the provisions relating to the parole of sexually dangerous persons from state institutions. Does it replace that with that release after the reexamination, or what does it do?
Doctor?
Yes, it replaces the procedure of going through the parole board with a trial visit staff that's really internal to the hospital system. It's the same review process, the disposition board plus the superintendent makes a recommendation. But it's a simplified process that doesn't go through another agency. It's a process, incidentally, that the parole board concurs with our amendment.
They normally now then just take your recommendation. So.
Well, normally what happens, because it's so cumbersome, it's a procedure that's not used. Typically, they're simply referred back to the court.
Instead,
there are two alternate mechanisms. It's a direct referral to the committing court or to the parole board. And then the parole board may only see two or three of these a year. And then, by and large, has to depend on our recommendations anyway. It becomes a very difficult process. So we're looking for an alternative.
You ready to vote? Third call to roll on 447 to the floor of the D-PAC.
Good.
Aye.
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 Do you think
you're carried? Put on your national consent. If it fails to go, Ms. Chance, you want to carry? Alright, we'll
carry it.
You want to carry it? Okay, fine. Let's call it to carry it. It doesn't go. 3272. Mr. Bailey.
Here.
Hold on.
Mr.
Chairman.
Excuse me. You that are carrying bills that are on unanimous consent should be aware that if it's pulled off, it comes up the same day. Be ready.
Yes, I do. I have it.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Bailey.
Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Bailey. I'm an attorney out of Portland, Oregon. And for the last 17 years or so, amongst other things, I've been representing the Oregon State Council and the AGC Carpenter Trust Fund in covering the state of Oregon and the 5.5 southwest counties of Washington. We now have approximately 10,000 carpenters that are covered by these funds, also about 1,200 employers. Now, these are in and out of the funds, they're not always steady employees, no steady employers. These funds are made up out of fringe benefits that are payable by contributions from employers. And in the course of the duties and obligations of these trust funds, their duties are to recover contributions as well as to handle the disposition and use of those funds. I'm authorized to appear here. In fact, we prepared the amendment to the ORF 87.855 that is before you at the request of the trust fund. I'm also authorized by the AFL-CIO to tell you that we can speak for them on this matter as well. The purpose of this bill is to modify ORF 8755 to bring it in line with the mechanics lien on the premise that these fringe benefits are in effect wages. They're negotiated when they are negotiated. They're negotiated in the alternative of wages. They have been since they came into being some 15 or 20 years ago. Now, those fringe benefits are becoming larger all the time. When they first started out, for example, in the Carpenter Trust Fund, there was 10 cents an hour given to health and welfare. And that was in 1956. since then, we've had that increased until the present time is $1.36 an hour. And a few people have negotiated, the employers and the union, have negotiated into fringe benefits. I'm speaking now, restricting my comments to the Carpenters program in the state here. Out of that, there has been increased from one trust fund to five now. So we now have five trust funds that do receive a division of $1.36. Yes.
$1.36 fringe benefits per hour?
Per hour, yeah. Now that's in lieu of the wage factor. It's high, no question about it. But I'm giving you these figures for a point. And that point is that this does build up fast. If it amounts to $10 and 30, or 35 to 50 cents a day, the exact figure. And approximately $235 a work rate a month for employee for a for an employer that is working full time. Now, what happens, and what has happened, is that we've had the good employers no problem, and no problem for any employer that's not under contract to pay, because these things do not apply to them. The Act Act it only applies to an employer who is a brief stay. But we have had employers that have gone into business more recently that go into what we call framing contractors, the people of that category. With a hammer and a few nails, they can get into business and start framing a section where you have multiple dwellings, and you can get in pretty deep in a very short time. And when you come around to collect the money from them for these trust funds and for the beneficiaries, they're broke or bankrupt. There's nobody that will protect the individual workman there except some method to be devised for that. Now, it was thought when the bill was first passed, I'm speaking now about 87855, it would cover the situation, but it does not attach to anything that can be obtained quickly enough to be able to protect these workmen. For those reasons, these trustees felt it would be important to be sure that this does attach like a mechanics plan. Attach the land into improvement. And the purpose of this is to transfer it to that factor. Now, I have requested our office to check our files. As I said, we do and have been doing this for the Carpenter Trust Fund as well as some others for a number of years. And if I may, this is a list of employers that we have recently in the office that have either gone bankrupt or have either not filed bankruptcy but have failed in some manner to pay their obligations, and these are not all of them, of course. But this, over a period of a year and a half or so, amounts to over $100,000 just for this one fund. Now, attached to that, as an example, I've asked also the administrator of the fund, which was the First U.S. National Bank Welfare Department, to check in to see what happened in respect to, for example, the Rawlinson account. Now, in Rawlinson, we found out that they owed a sum of $22,600, which is an uncollectible. They're bankrupt. The parties that we've attached here are the face pages of claims for the health and welfare for these individuals that worked for Rawlinson, that had Rawlinson paid, would have received their benefits that are set forth here. As an example, the first one out of there is $2,308 that this party paid out in medical benefits that would have been paid for him had he been able to collect the money.
Excuse me, where do you get that figure?
It's a figure that's written in. Now, maybe those figures aren't all clear.
I got it.
On the face pages of these attachments, I didn't attach the entire record, but just the face pages, is a figure written in circles. And they may not be too clear on those copies. Hopefully they are, so to be able to read them. We've added up that just in the Rawlinson case alone, in health and welfare. Now, that doesn't include such things as the pension and the vacation that would have been paid out, too. That there's some $4,500 or $4,600 here that would have gone to these employees had he paid his contribution, or hadn't been able to collect those contributions. point that up because this is, we think, an important factor. It doesn't affect, in our opinion, the good employers or the employers that intend to have financial backing to pay. But the employee that's doing the work on the job is improving that property. He's putting a house on it or a piece of property on it, same as a mechanic lien situation. Improving that property, and the property owner or the improvement owner of that property gets the benefit of it. The employee, and rather than put all of his money into wages, has chosen to bargain through his negotiators for fringe benefits. The trustees feel that they should be treated the same in respect to the protection for the fringe benefits as the protection that is given to them on mechanical wages or mechanical lien. And that's the intent of this bill, is to give him the same rights under the fringe benefit lien that he does have now under the mechanics lien.
If I understand this correctly, then where these people don't pay in, then the group picks it up?
No.
The
trust fund is not permitted to pay out contributions or pay out benefits unless it receives the contribution. So if we cannot collect the contribution, that's speaking in terms of the trust fund, then there's no premium paid and no recovery by the employee.
Now, the question, if, for example, under the pay them pay in their contribution,
if we can recover at any time in the future, there's a bankruptcy, you all know that once you've gone bankrupt, you've been discharged. Possibilities are practically nil. But if we were able to recover the 26, any amount there would be attributed to the credit of these employees and turn wherever it makes them eligible to be paid.
Yeah, now maybe then in other words, then these people who've been injured and so forth, then are on their own.
There's no method right now to give them recovery.
I just
want
to
make
that clear on my mind.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do I understand correctly that had this bill been the law, and Rawlinson was the employer, right?
Yes.
And you'd gone back to get the money from Rawlinson, and it was not there, right? Then you would have gone to each item of real property on which Rawlinson had worked.
Well, in this particular instance, Representative Hampton, he was working on a large development. And making many houses there, attach a lien to that development, and it's been paid.
Okay, but if he had worked on, say, 8, 10, or 12 homes, right, at different areas, then there would have been a lien, right?
You're speaking out of the present law?
Well, assuming that 20 to 32 were the law,
yes.
He did not pay, there would be a lien on all those homes to improve your property. For the amount of required contribution, is that right?
To the amount that they had worked on that property.
The problem I have is this. How is the notice of the lien filed?
Well, if you follow our experience, is to file a notice, of course, to file it in the county clerk's office and then send a copy to the homeowner as well as to the contractor.
Under the bill as it stands, I don't see the provision for filing a notice of lien, and I'm wondering if I'm overlooking something.
Well, the total bill is not here. It's in the statute.
Yeah.
I forget the...
Okay, 87860 says the lien claimant under sub 1 of 855, which this one then would be, or trustees, within 60 days after such payment becomes due, shall file for record with recording officer of the county where the claimant is or is employed, so forth. Name of the employer, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you would have, as I understand it, you'd have to go back and make this determination on each parcel of property on which the employer had worked.
That's what we try to do now, yes.
Except that now it's only on the employers.
Right now it's only on the earnings that the bill now provides. That's why we have to try to divide it now.
Well, why is the black type the improvement? And
well, that's
improvement?
That's the addition that we proposed to put into this statute.
Oh, start me over again because I think I've lost you. Okay. Right now, on earnings alone, would you go back and claim a lien on Rawlinson if this were the law?
Well, that, if you had the law enacted today, the answer would be no, because the statute does not give us the permit to go back beyond the 60-day period in here. We have not amended that fact.
Okay. But without, let's just assume there is no new statute, the law is as it is right now. Rawlinson has employed your employee, your member, on a number of parcels, but has not paid wages. Not
Princeton.
Has not paid wages.
All right.
Okay. Presently, your lien attaches only to the, all property used in the operation of the employer's business, doesn't it?
That's right.
And it does not attach then to all these homes on which Rawlinson might have worked.
That's correct. Now, may I suggest this, that we have have brought this procedure in a number of courts since this act has been passed. Some courts have said yes, it does, and some have said it hasn't. We do not have any answer from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But for clarification, we think it should be treated like a mechanic lien.
Okay, now that brings me to my situation. Let's assume that this bill were law, and I then am the landowner who has contracted with Rawlinson. I don't know what Rawlinson does. Is he a contractor?
Framer, I think.
Well, okay, I've contracted with Rawlinson. Let's assume the bill was.
Yeah.
I've paid him the whole work, but he hasn't paid you. I, the homeowner, then, have to stand this for the health and welfare fund.
You have to do that now if he hasn't paid the wages.
Well, I thought you just said that some of the courts were interpreting this as
No. I think you're misunderstanding me.
Oh.
There's no question about the interpretation on 87005, which is a mechanics lien for wages. 87005, at fact, is the law that relates to mechanics.
Okay.
87855 is that that refers to fringe benefits.
Okay. For wages, right. You can do it. But that assumes any laborer can, right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, what would the difference then be by adding these words and on the improvement on the land which the employee works?
Well, at the present time, under the fringe benefits, representative, the Rawlinson here, under the fringe benefits, you can attach that property for the wages. But the courts have said, certain courts have said that you cannot attach that property, the land, or the improvement, for fringe benefits.
Okay.
And this is the fringe benefits statute.
Okay, then if I, the employer, if this were the law, I, the employer, want to make sure that I got a lien waiver, because that's the way we generally do it out in Beaverton. If the savings and loan or the bank is paying out on a construction mortgage, you try to get a lien waiver. Okay, or you try to get as good a determination as you can that all the employees have been paid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does the owner or the contractor, general or sub, how does he get an indication that the health and welfare contribution has been paid so no lien will attach?
Well, that would raise the question. I'm sure that it can be done because an application, if you're in the process of financing, the application or inquiry can be made to the administrator of the fund. Or the employer himself can show you the evidence of payment. Because he does have, I don't have it with me, he has a form in which he makes the reports monthly on who he pays.
But what I'm getting at, practically, how would I go about it, though?
Ask him for evidence that he's paid, just like you do now.
Well, what I'm saying, I might not know. Say, I'm a general contractor, you're my sub, and he's a sub, and she's an employee, right? And there's the health and welfare trustee. I pay you, you pay him, he pays employee, everything goes well.
Right.
Okay. But I may not even know whether there is a requirement for all this. If I'm the owner now, and this becomes law, I'm going to have to determine, clear all the way through, whether there is a health and welfare contribution required, clear down to the end of the chain of everyone who's working on it. Okay?
Well, I think so.
Do you think that that's an extraordinary burden to place on the homeowner? Or the
well, I don't think that. If you ask my, I assume you're asking my personal opinion.
Sure.
No.
Yeah.
My answer to that one is that I don't think it's any more a burden on the homeowner than it is to determine that the wages are paid.
Well, for the wage, you know, you can observe physically how many people are working. You know,
Well, it's a good inquiry now, is that if a man, and it's very simple to ask your contractor when he's got a contract that requires fringe benefits, and if he has got a contract that requires fringe benefits,
okay,
then you have to understand whether or not you pay him.
Then I'd have to rely on, in this case, his word on whether or not he had paid the fringe benefits. Assuming our hypothetical.
I think that's true. It's like you have to rely now that he's paid his wages.
Except now I can witness the number of people who've worked.
Yeah, but you don't know whether he's paid them enough unless he told you, and you have to rely on it.
But the practical matter, what we sometimes do is go straight to the employee.
This can be checked out very simply on this other factor. Probably you could get a better check on whether he's paid fringe benefits and whether he's paid wages, because we got administrators, the United States National Bank, and we very quickly can check it out.
Further questions?
I just have a
kind of
question. How would this, on these fringes that aren't paid, is this any way going to affect, like subcontractors and contractors, I guess, have to have bonds now?
It's our opinion, I imagine you're asking me whether or not the prison bond law applies. It's our opinion in reviewing of that it does not apply to fringe benefits. I think it applies only to material men. That's our opinion.
If we change this one,
this wouldn't affect that bonding law, as I read.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, this is so late in the session, and this, even if we were lured out, it wouldn't get anywhere. And I would suggest that we, and I would move that we refer this, as we did those other two bills the other day, to the Law Improvement Committee, because it's going to take some study.
The Law Improvement Committee is, at the present time, studying Chapter 87.
And we've already sent it to them.
I had a call from Mr. former Senator Husband. He says they are working on this chapter, and in fact, they're meeting here in Salem next week.
May I comment about that?
To continue their work on this.